Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. You're now live on the Middlemen Talk Show on the Middlemen Radio, and I'm Al.
It's Kevin.
And this is Ian.
Back together again.
Yeah, that just sounded so wrong.
Yeah, see, y'all a little out of sync, but we're now back live on the Middlemen Talk Show. Today is February 12th, 2012. Cold day. Another grieving day for, you know, the fans of the R&B world. I'm going to give a shout out to Whitney Houston and her family. We'll send all our condolences out to her family and friends and everyone who know Whitney throughout her years. And even before we as a people knew who Whitney Houston was, I mean, I think she was a great person. You know, everybody has their bumps and bruises in the road, but overall, she was a great person. I think Andy already mentioned that when she won all those Grammys back in 2002, she was just talking about how great of a person Whitney Houston was, and she said that she didn't even know Whitney Houston personally. She was just saying that Whitney Houston sent her some roses and, you know, congratulated her on getting all those Grammys, and, you know, she said she never met Whitney Houston or never spoken to her, and she was just, you know, That touched me, you know what I'm saying, for, you know, someone to don't even know you to even just reach out to you like that.
Yeah, I got to agree with you, man. And on a personal note, I got to say, you know, Whitney was one of the best pure voices, not just in R&B, but just in music, period, man. And this is, it's a tough time right now for her family. I know earlier they reported that her daughter, Bobby Christina, was rushed off to the hospital. So we just, you know, we're all praying for her right now. We're praying for them. Bobby Brown, he, you know, they've been divorced for about 4 years now, but, you know, even he broke down on stage last night. He and New Edition were performing in Mississippi. And, you know, she touched a lot of lives, man. Any singer that's come out in the last 30 years has been influenced by Whitney. She was the type of artist that influenced people after her and before her, you know? So it's a tragic loss, not just to the music business, but to the world, because, you know, she did show that, you know, you can come back, you can be great again, and we're just going to honor her memory, and we're just going to keep, you know, continuing to honor the legacy that she left. You know, take all the personal stuff out of it. She left a great legacy of music, man. That's what's the most important thing to me.
And she really set the standard of being a pure R&B singer, you know. Just having that voice that she had coming out of that frame of body that she had, she really set the tone for that. You know, a lot of record executives, when they were first listening to, well, heard about this young girl, they didn't believe that type of voice was coming out of her body. And once they actually saw who she was and how she looked, it was just, you know, it amazed them, you know. But you can't deny talent when you see it or when you hear it.
I do have to say this one thing. I don't want to harp on this too long, but I do have to say this one thing. I understand that, you know, times like these, in certain situations that the show must go on, but I have a serious issue with the members of Clive Davis's pre-Grammy party. You know, this party, I understand, like I said, I understand the whole concept of the show must go on. But we're sitting up here having a party and her body is still upstairs. That's a little crazy to me. it's just a little crazy to me. And I think that, I think people, man, people just got to prioritize stuff, man. Like, certain things that you just certain things you just don't do. And that's
right.
one of them.
Right.
You know, you say you honor her memory, but y'all having a party and she's upstairs dead on the floor of the hotel room. That's crazy to me. So,
okay.
And I don't want to stay on it too long, but I think that they need to reevaluate how important some so they say someone is to them. So that's, you know, that's it. I don't really want to get too much into
it. Yeah. Well, we're excited to have everybody back on the show today. You know, we have our lovely co-host Jennifer back in the building. How you doing, Jen?
I am doing quite well. I'm glad to be back. I miss everybody.
Yeah, I think everybody missed you too. I had some people asking about you. You know, have I heard from you in a while? And or seen you
I know. I'm still got my spirit and still got lots of opinions, much more to share. And I'm excited about getting back into action today.
Well,
I'm mad
we're
going to
do
Jenna.
It.
I'm mad at you, Jenna. I'm telling you right
Why?
Now. Because of you, I went down to the unemployment office so that I could get unemployment, and they said, you work for the middleman. Jen has taken all of the unemployment that the middleman has to offer, so you cannot get unemployment now. So because of you, I had to start work at McDonald's because I couldn't get any more unemployment because you're taking all the middleman's unemployment benefits.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. I'm really craving a smoothie right now, so, like, can you hook me up since you work at McDonald's? And, you know, Wildberry is my favorite.
Hell no, wow. They took all of my employee privileges away, too. It's your fault.
Wow.
Just saying.
Hey, something else y'all forgot, man.
What's
we are going, it's another anniversary.
Three years. Wow.
Another anniversary.
Yeah.
I am happy.
Oh, it is. That really slipped my mind.
Yeah. Another day, man. Another anniversary, man.
I just want to say this, man. I really want to thank y'all, Kat. A lot of people who started listening to us because the middlemen a little later, y'all might not know, you know, and this is Nick speaking, I actually started off as just a regular caller. And the guys, they kind of took to me, you know, me and Jen, we argued a lot and people responded to it and they kind of brought me in. So, you know, big shout out to y'all, man. This is crazy. It's 3 years. 3 years going strong.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It has.
A lot of the blog talk shows that ain't around no more. I'm just saying.
Yep. That is true. That is true. That is true.
Couldn't hang.
That is true. That is true.
I'm happy to be here, man. Happy to be here. Hey, thanks to everybody that's tuning in over on the web chat. You know, we got some people jumping in, jumping out. Black Awareness, hey, we appreciate you. Yes. They want to know what cowards in what. Keep listening. You will find out.
Oh, yeah.
Most definitely. So
we got a great show
planned for everybody out there listening today. We you know, had this discussion previous time about this particular show, so we decided to go ahead and throw it out there today. And not because it's Black History Month. This is just a show that we just had to go ahead on and do, due to some of the situations that have been going on in the news and also in the surrounding areas and in which we live at. And we're going to touch on some of those things today. But, of course, as you all see, the title of today's show, Are Black People Cowards? And we're looking at it as, you know, a whole as far as from our predecessors up to now. You know, there has been a dramatic change in how we are as a people. Now, back over the past century and a half, we can see that, you know, our predecessors have been fighting for our rights and for standing up for all mankind through those trying years. You know, we have learned in history that many of our revered Black leaders who have came in the forefront spoke out against spoke out for the Black race by being, you know, considered not equal to the majority. And with that being said, have we forgot about what our forefathers fought for during those years? You know, the Civil Rights Movement. you know, the Black Panther movement, the movement back, you know, in the 1800s, you know, with the, you know, the abolition of slavery, you know, with Frederick Douglass and Nat Turner and all those people. Are we as people conditioned to bow down and not speak out for what is right? We have seen in multiple news conferences or in situations to where, like, in many, plenty of basketball games where a player may say something, or maybe a news anchor or somebody in the public says something that another race will take out of context, and we are back into a corner to where we have to feel like we have to apologize for speaking our opinion. And then also, we want to look at the type of structure in which we live in now, as far as our predecessors fought for us to go to school, fought for us the right to vote. Now we have a lot of our people in our community that are not going to school, they're not going to college, they're not voting, you know, they don't want to work, you know, they just, you know, they're not taking on those things in which our grandparents and great-grandparents fought for us for. That's what we're talking about today. Also, we want to, you know, talk about, are we scared to take back our communities and our place of businesses? You know, we had plenty of black-owned businesses that were thriving back in the 80s and 90s. And all of a sudden, you know, there's only maybe, you know, less than 10 major black companies out there that we can maybe name. I don't even know if we can name 10. You know,
maybe a lot more.
Yeah.
I can name them. They just don't sell the black people anymore.
Exactly. Also, we also want to talk about, you know, why do some of our black organizations appear to have less of a voice when it comes to the black community? We have a lot of black organizations that are out there. A lot of us do not know of them. You know, why do we feel like they, you know, we don't see them as much when something happens? You know, should they speak out more? Should we speak out more? Should we talk to them to help us speak out more? We will also discuss, you know, the situation with Roland Martin, and also his suspension from CNN, and also this young man named Cody Smith, who is a senior at Gainesville High School, who will be the first black valedictorian at his high school in the school history. However, the high school is attempting to have this young man share his accomplishment with one of his white classmates due to the school not wanting to have a black valedictorian. So we're going to get into all of that. There are some other things which we'll point out today in this show. If you have any comments that you want to say on today's show, if you're on the chat board, place your comments there. If you're on the line, make sure you press the number 1. The number to dial is 718-508-9972. We'll definitely get to you within a time and manner. Anybody have anything else to add to that?
Yeah, man. You know, this is Black History Month, and this show right here, I know a lot of people are like, man, what are you guys meaning about, like, why black people are cowards? You know, if you listen to this show a little bit longer, you'll see exactly what do we mean. Coward, calling someone a coward is a strong word. That is an exciting word, as far as it would incite somebody possibly to fight. You call them a coward. So
right.
We want to get into this conversation, and we want you guys to have an open mind, have a lot of opinions. If you have your opinions out there, please make sure you dial that number that we just gave out. It's also on the web chat. Let us know how you feel about what we're talking about. This is a two-way conversation right here. We want to hear from you guys tonight. And also, in respect to this being Black History Month, I want to start this song off right here. We're going to take a little break right here. I want to start off with this right here, y'all. This is my man, James Brown. Y'all keep listening. After this right here, we're going to go directly into the conversation. Yeah, if you don't know this song right here, you might not be this, but I know I am. Black and Proud. You listen to the Middleman. Middleman Radio.
Take you eyes to make a pair. Brother, we can't quit. head against the wall and working for someone else. Say it now. Say it loud. Say it loud. Say it loud.
I'm back live on the Middleman Talk Show. That was, of course, James Brown. I'm black and I'm proud. Those two things used to mean the same thing back in the day. Being black and being proud to be black. Those things used to mean the same thing. Like, everybody, you know, was just really behind that back in the day. Now it seems like, I don't know. I don't see that anymore.
Really don't. I tell you what the problem is, man. The problem is, we did a show about the new Negro a while ago, and the problem is the new Negro. The problem is everybody's so busy concerned about me, my. I got mine, you better get yours. There's no pride in us as a culture anymore. You know, back in the day, you used to watch the music videos, and you wouldn't see them trying to dress up in whatever the latest fashion was. They'd have a Howard University sweater on or a Morehouse shirt.
Right.
A Clark shirt. You know what I'm saying? There was some pride. A Tuskegee shirt. You know what I'm saying? And I'm a pride in that. We would have black fraternities in those videos. There would be a display of pride. You would be proud to have somebody like Jesse Jackson in your video. Nowadays, whoever is the hottest, you know, it just, I don't know, man. It's just, we cows, we ain't got no more pride in ourselves.
Right.
Now, from a historical standpoint, Like you were just saying, you know, we were proud to be black. You know, our forefathers and those who fought for us on, you know, the civil rights, you know, trying to obtain those rights that we needed as a people to be equal. It seems like now we're not, like, we're just taking, I mean, it doesn't have no meaning to the generation, to me and my opinion, because, like I said, you have some of those that are not going to school, they're not trying, they don't vote, they don't care to vote, they really don't know who is actually running in 2012 anyway. The only person that they know of is, what, President Obama. But that's because, you know, he's black, but do you really, you know, understand the reasoning behind the campaign? Do you really understand the reasoning behind the right to vote? You know, do you understand the reason behind why our forefathers fought for us and died and got sprayed with water hoses so we could have the right to vote?
I kind of feel like it's deeper than that, man. It goes back to the title, Are We Cowards? I think a lot of us, you know, we've gotten to the point where our mind state is that of fear, and not just necessarily being fearful in the sense of being scared. It's fearful of trying something new. We've got accustomed to being a certain way in our community. We've gotten accustomed to once we've achieved, we don't want to do anything else but what we've done as of recent. So when you think about it, man, you say, what about our forefathers? I look maybe, what, 40, 50 years ago, and maybe 60 years ago. in the 60s, the 50s, and that era right there, you had black people, man, that stood up for what they believe in. You had black people that wasn't afraid. They were about their communities. It changed in the 70s, and it changed a whole lot in the 80s, and therefore after that, it really changed. So when you look at our communities now, man, it's to the point of the question should be, have we forgotten? It's why have we forgotten? It ain't the fact that we don't see, because we have a Black History Month every month, every year, at the same time. And we have McDonald's with their little commercials and all that. It's become so commercialized where it doesn't even have any meaning anymore to anybody. It's just like, it's Black History Month again. Ooh, whoop-de-doo.
I can't go all the way with you on that one, Kevin. The reason I say that is because of the fact that it does have meaning. The problem is it doesn't have meaning to us. Truth of the matter is, in today's time, Black History Month has more meaning to people who are black. I see more people of different cultures celebrate the true meaning of Black History Month, which is what our contributions were to America in general.
Mm-hmm.
I see more cultures celebrating that than we do.
But are they celebrating it correctly? I don't know if any of you are friends with me on Facebook, but I posted the other day, like, a clip from Jimmy Kimmel Live where he went on the street and asked, like, white people who their favorite black people were for, like, Black History Month. And, like, what we celebrate is, like, no one named anyone who wasn't an entertainer. I say this, every person that they named was an entertainer. No one of historical significance was even named. And I think that even though we have other cultures recognizing us, are they recognizing us correctly?
Yeah, that's a good way to put that, because I would say probably in the next 20 years, when we look back on black accomplishments, we're going to have more of an entertainment perspective of history in our history, instead of, you know, black doctors, black lawyers, black poets, black writers, black actors. You know, we're going to see more of that in our history instead of, you know, a Langston Hughes or Tennessee Williams, things like that. You know, we won't have that. We won't have another Dr. Martin Luther King or another Malcolm X. That would probably not be another person like that. You know, you probably won't see kids doing book reports on, you know, those people like that anymore. They're probably going to start doing book reports on Lil Wayne or Jeezy or Jay-Z.
But goes back to the conditioning, though, Al, don't it? I mean, we have a community that's been conditioned, because, like, if you see violence so much, you won't look at it like it's, you know what I'm saying? Once you see violence so much, when it really does happen again, you're going to look at it like, oh, okay, well, somebody has been killed. Wow. It's nothing. So I think our people has gotten to the point where, you know, as a people, we look at everything that goes on in our community, everything that goes on with our young men, our young women, and it's nothing new to us anymore. I see we do have a caller. Y'all want to go ahead and bring them in?
Yeah, go ahead. Yes, sir.
All right. Caller 662, you're live on the Middleman Talk Show. What's up?
What's going on, middlemen and women?
What's happening, Zerod?
Hey.
What's going on, Zerod?
Nothing much. And first off, I want to say happy anniversary to y'all. Congratulations on the show's success.
Thank you.
Oh, and about the topic, I want to say a couple of things. I noticed what Jen was saying, and I agree with her. But we got to understand that the two biggest pictures in this whole conversation that we're talking about, the big picture about as far as, like, how we acknowledge black history is just this. You know, there's a culture, has been a cultural change. People like Dr. Martin Luther King, to these young people, that's a preacher to them kids. Entertainers, actors, rap, hip-hop artists, those people are more appealing to their eyes. A person like Dr. Martin Luther King, you got to think, back in the 70s, there was no Young Jeezy. So guess what? The person that was appealing to those people were like Dr. Martin Luther King. You know, in the 70s, you know, somebody getting up there talking about civil rights.
But Gerard, hold on, Gerard.
That was Tupac and Young Jesus to those people.
Gerard, we did have stars that people idolized, like Jesse Owens and your Al Cinder, Lou Alcindor, and all these different.
Yes, ladies. I agree with you. But what?
Can I interject really quickly? I heard something tonight at a rally that I think is very significant to this. Is that what has changed amongst our people is that we let other people and I'm talking about African Americans, we let other people educate our children. Well, before,
exactly.
We were the educators of our children. They went to school and they learned, but who to admire, who to look up to, what's going on in our community. We as parents, well, our forefathers, our people before us, were actively involved in shaping what we saw and well, what their children saw and how they were involved in the people that they looked up to. Where it has changed is we let the schools and television and radio and all of that be the driving force amongst our children, and I think that is the change.
Exactly.
From this standpoint, there was a lot more pride in being a teacher back in the day as opposed to now.
Exactly.
Now, and something that I'm so glad that President Obama addressed in his State of the Union, now you got teachers that just teach to the test.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that's changed. There was pride in being a teacher. I was fortunate. I went to Alabama State University, which is the number one producer of black teachers in the nation. When I was there, I can't speak for now, but there was real pride in, look, you're going to be an educator. You're responsible for the next generation of leaders, for the next generation of entertainers, for the next generation of everything that makes this country and this world what it is. There's not any pride like that anymore. Now it's just, I'm going to go up and I'm going to get my check because I know it's a guaranteed check. I ain't got to work during the summer because I'm a teacher. And I heard teachers say these things.
But they better look at also this, you know, this too. Due to some of those, you know, the education requirements that, you know, the Board of Education has placed on the United States, it's hard to get those kids to pass. You know, that's
but because of
anyway.
The parents, you have to bring it back.
Yeah,
when President Obama first became in office, he wanted to say that we need as parents to start taking some personal responsibility. It's up to the parents.
That,
if you look back on the civil rights movement, the people at the front line, the people that went to jail were children. They used children across the board in the civil rights movement. Those were kids getting attacked by dogs and water hoses. A lot of children were. And so the thing is, how many people teach their children to get involved and to stand up and to teach their children about their community and the importance of community? That is not being passed down. It's up to you as a parent.
People don't care to have that respect and pride like they did back in the day. People had pride and respect for themselves back in the day. That's not in society today. Like I just told y'all, the culture has changed. And as far as like y'all talking about are black people afraid politically, it's not just a political issue. It's a domestic problem that we deal with, even on the job. If a white person tells a black person down in fire, you think the rest of the guys in the company is going to get together and go fight for a job? Because guess what? We have all been taught, man, that white people can take something from us, and we scared to stand up. Because guess what? We scared to lose what we got. Why?
Yep,
because everybody all for themselves. They stuck together back in the day.
Yeah. We have a couple of comments over here on the web chat, Black Awareness. You know, they was talking about integration and how it had a positive effect on our community and the ability to advance in this nation. I would say I agree, but I somewhat disagree, respectfully disagree, because with integration, it also led to the point where our community was divided and basically we got conquered. Just my opinion, because you do have a lot of people that did advance, and you have those that didn't advance also, because it's like when we had all our black businesses in our community, a lot of times, man, we would prefer to go outside of that community and shop elsewhere. Just like they said, in the Jewish community, that dollar is spent, 10 times or so? In the black community, it's spent one time, and that's out of our hand to somebody else's hand. But in our community, it doesn't go around like that, so I think integration did play its part on hurting our community also.
Right. That goes to the question about, you know, taking back our community and our businesses. You know, that's one thing that we did have pride in as far as owning our own businesses and making our own products, just like when FUBU came out. You know, the name FUBU, you know, said it, you know, it was self-explanatory for us and by us, you know, but
Al,
the point of winning it,
where does FUBU fell down? See, a lot of people don't realize
that. I was about to get to that.
Still good. Still good. I'm fine.
Yeah, I mean, but we don't have control over that, though.
We could control the fact that we could still choose to support them, but see, we've become so trendy nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Women still sell very well. And where do they sell? They sell in Japan. They sell very well in Japan. Why? Because Japan has very much so respected and adored black culture. If you go over there now, you go to a Japanese club, you think you're going to hear the number one pop star in Japan? No. You're going to hear some Tupac. You're going to hear some Biggie. You're going to hear all the black artists from
the United States.
But
Nick,
dude,
I mean,
we do that.
Nick, culturally, I mean, yeah, we've given the world music culturally. But as far as a people with us being respected, we are not respected as Americans, as black Americans, as African Americans, as black people. We're not respected and revered around
right.
this world. We're hated.
We are demanded.
We're looked at with disgust. So, I mean, dude, what's the purpose of even saying we gave y'all music and be happy about that? What's the purpose?
That's not what I'm saying, Kev. What I'm saying is respect is earned. And quite honestly, as a whole, we don't deserve the respect that we had 30, 40 years ago. The culture has changed so much. Like, let's just be honest. Respect is deserved. I don't give anybody respect that does not deserve respect. And quite frankly, as a whole, the black community...
We don't deserve respect.
They don't deserve the respect that we once had.
I got to agree with Nick on that, Kev, man. I got to agree with Nick.
Mm.
You know, it just kind of is what it is. And what's going to truly mess things up is the fact that everybody is so concerned about me, I. One thing that happened, just like we talked about on the chat board, we got integration, but another way they got into our minds is that light-skinned, dark-skinned slave mentality.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like you said, some people capitalized on it, some people didn't, but it wasn't just that, because you had blacks that made more money than other blacks. But during the bus boycott of Montgomery, the more well-off blacks were willing to extend their hand to the ones that weren't as well-off as them and say, hey, don't ride this bus. We're going to give y'all rides to work. That's why I said in the chat board, do you think that today, because all they had then was the Alabama State College newspaper and word of mouth. That was the only way that they could get out to the rest of Montgomery, that there was a bus boycott. Now, with Facebook, Twitter, and all this stuff, today, everything that we have, text messages, all that, I promise you, we could not organize a boycott the way that they did because we're not as together as they were.
Exactly. That's the only point I was trying to make right there. It's different now, man. Everybody's all about themselves these days, man. And like I said, this is not politically, man. It's domestic, man. I mean, everybody all for themselves, man. Don't nobody care about nobody.
Well, see, that's the thing that is really breaking us down, because, you know, this is something that we discussed on previous shows as far as getting out in our community to try to build that back up, just like with the disciplinary actions that our neighbors used to do to us. Like, if we were to get in trouble in their yard, they would come out and spank us. We don't have that no more. You know,
no.
We don't have that, you know, that raising of village, you know, syndrome no more. You know,
it's sad when I hear black people say that they don't want to live in black neighborhoods, they would rather stay around white people. And you know what?
Yeah.
A girl explained that to me one time. She said, Gerard, if you live in a black neighborhood and your house getting broken in, the guys, the little boys down the street, the folks hanging out on the corner, whatever, guess what they're going to say? I don't know nothing about it. I ain't seen nothing. I ain't got nothing to do with it. But she said, Gerard, versus if I go live in a white neighborhood, if somebody breaking in my house, guess what? Miss Anna Sue, whoever the white lady is talking, she gonna call the police. She gonna tell. And you know what, Kev? I just shut my mouth. Cause you know what? White people care, man. White people ain't gonna sit up there and let somebody break your house. They're finna tell.
Hey, man, I care.
Like that until their communities, man. White people finna keep their communities clean. Black people, if somebody break your house, care, get what? Don't nobody know what happened.
But you know what, dude? I care. If somebody in my neighborhood doing something wilding out, yeah, I'm one of them brothers. I'm gonna call the cops. I'm snitching. Yeah.
And that's me. I'm like that. A lot of people don't like me in my neighborhood. I'm going to tell it. You know what I'm saying? My kids got to live in this neighborhood.
Exactly.
You know,
got to have that.
And the girl said that, though, man. I really couldn't say nothing careful because guess what? The truth is the truth. white people care about, you know what I'm saying, things, man. Black people don't care if it ain't happening to them. If it ain't affecting them directly, they don't care.
I do care, and I'm black, Gerard. Just
but
saying.
We're talking about it as a whole. Hey, you
I know.
You
not all white people care either, because I've been through some trailer parks, and they don't do nothing over there either. So we're not going to generalize and say all white people care and all black people don't care.
I'm not saying
that.
I'm just saying a majority. I'm just saying a vast majority. You know, so now I'm not going
to
say you're in an upscale white neighborhood.
Going to that topic about all black people are black people cowards. The difference is you had a lot of people that stepped up back in the day. Look at where we come from. We
yeah.
didn't have Dr. Martin Luther King in Mississippi mm-hmm. fighting over Mississippi, but you can
nope.
damn sure bet that Mecca Evers says, okay, you had people that would step up. That's, I guess that's the biggest thing. The reason that you had so many black leaders, quote unquote, is because so many people were willing to step up for what was right.
True that.
Exactly.
Hey, we do have another caller that would like to get in the conversation. Caller 626, you are live on the Middleman Talk Show. What's up?
Hey, what's up, brother? This is Covina, man. I'm a black brother in the chat room.
What's going on, son of a man?
Hey, what's going on?
Knievel, man.
Yeah, how you doing?
What's going on,
bro? It's all good, man. I think that a lot of people are scared or a lot of people are conditioned to like where they're at. And they like the condition that they find other black people in, which is on the bottom. That makes them good because they can be in the middle or on the top and have most black people on the bottom, and people are happy with that. And I think that there's a number of black people, like myself, was not happy with the situation and is putting aside differences we might have with different people of different religions, and we brothers are organizing.
Mm-hmm.
Organizing an alternative strategy, man. We're not just gonna sit up here and just accept the status quo. We're, you know, brothers are organizing. So, you know, I just want to put that out there. Brothers are making moves right now. So,
you know what, man? I would love to see more of a grassroots type movement across this country, because I don't think it's gonna take, you know, a big publicized type situation where everybody and their mama know about it, because that's when people kind of back down and get scared of that situation. I really think it starts in smaller groups, and it has to spread like wildfire. That's just my opinion. I'm glad that you brothers are doing it. I would love to be a part of something like that myself.
Well, you got to start somewhere, man. Like, you look at the Black Panther Party. It all started because of the streetlight. Like, come on now. It's, a lot of people think that it takes this big mass organization to do this. No, a lot of this, it comes from necessity. This needs to be changed. This needs to be done. And it usually takes one or two people to step up. That's really all it comes down to.
And somebody got to see the problem.
Right.
We all see the problem. We all understand and pretty much know the steps in order it needs to take to like change the problem or create a solution for that problem. It's just that getting the support in the community that we need to make these solutions come, you know, to life. Just you know, President Obama, you know, if he would have had more support with, you know, Congress with some of the things in which he wanted to enact with the government, you know, some of those things would be coming into play right now. But he don't have that support. So, and, you know, and that comes to the miseducation of, you know, what other community leaders have been poisoning some of these, you know, these people who believe in them all the time, you know,
and
I don't want to single people out, but Kevin and I talk about that all the time. Go ahead, Jim.
But may I say this, like, as far as, like, President Obama with the support of Congress, how many times have we spoken about on this show, like, call your congressman, you know, do this, do that. How many people in our community do that? People actually think that people don't do that, but they do. In other cultures, other communities, they call their congressmen, they voice their opinion, you pay taxes, you have a right to call these people and demand upon them action that you want them to represent you to do. We don't do those things. We don't.
No.
We don't show up at meetings. We don't do those things.
Hey, Jen, we do have another caller. We're going to go ahead and bring this call in right quick to let them voice their opinion. Caller 843, you're live on the Middleman Talk Show. What's up?
Hey, what's up, gentlemen? It's T. Smitty. How y'all doing,
man? What's up,
man?
Smitty?
Man,
what's
not much. Hey, man, my bull took one on the chin today, but it's all right, man.
Yeah.
But like our topic, though, see, some black people are cowards. people talking about these movements and stuff, first things first, these movements, I thought you got to keep pastors out of it. I'm going to be honest with that one. You need people that's willing to strike up. Because, one, you're talking about having a movement, you got to have financial backing. Mm-hmm. And let's be honest here. The powers that be don't fear Jesus. They fear money and votes. Mm-hmm. Let's just be honest here. But also, it starts at the lowest level. Black people in our own neighborhoods are scared to snitch out the dope dealer or the guy who shot somebody in their neighborhood. Yeah. That right there shows you're a coward. Or calling out another black person on their BS, no matter how it may make them feel. You know this kid dropped out of high school. You call him out on it. Or this girl keep getting pregnant by losers. Call him out on it. But we don't do that because what do we say? Oh, you're judging me. You can't judge me. Only God could judge me, but they ain't read the Bible past Adam and Eve. You know, but the same people had a
together
part.
So that's why.
And the thing is, with movements, the problem is you will have to cut people out. You have to cut them out. You know, as a friend of mine said, people like microwave popcorn. Some will pop, some won't, but the bag gonna burn if you leave them all in trying to pop the rest of those kernels. So I feel like that, one, black people didn't go out to vote for a congressional election when John Boehner and those guys got power in the White House. That's why President Obama didn't get that stuff passed, because Congress is blocking him. Not because Congress is blocking him, because we didn't show up to vote.
Exactly.
We don't show up. We don't make our voices heard. We won't put money together unless it's trying to hustle. So, you know, like, my last thing is, look at, like, everybody's mad at GLAD. But one thing about them, you may disagree with them, what they stand for, but one, they're organized, they have their money together, and they're not afraid to make their voices heard.
That's right.
And that squeaky wheel is getting greasy. And also, one thing about being cowardly, when was the last time you seen somebody go up to the school board and they said, well, the school ain't getting no money? Why aren't you at these school board meetings demanding that they put money in these schools? Like, start off with that. Or have a neighborhood watch. Or better yet, how about you don't be a coward in your own home, and you may have those people who are bad degenerates. You kick them out. You have degenerates in your community. You kick them out. That's part of being strong. If you can't even do it, or better yet, you know how these black schools, they get a lot of these fights going on.
Mm-hmm.
When was the last time you seen parents speak out on TV talking about that they don't clean this up, I'm pulling my kid out of here?
Man, it's rare. It's far and few. But you have some out there that do it, Smitty.
Oh, yeah.
It's not publicized.
Yeah, my mom did. Like, I grew up in the burbs in Montgomery, Alabama. And, like, there was, like, a fight and stuff there years ago. I was a high school a long time ago. But,
I was just about to say, man, come on, man. That's been changed a little bit. The burbs in Montgomery didn't change from what they used to be. Hell, Spring Valley used to be the burbs, man. It's good.
Yeah, you ain't lying. Hey, I went back home, man. I was like, whoo, boy. hey, glad I was on that east side of Bell Road. Even Bell Road went down. You brought up a good point. We let our neighborhoods go down. Being a strong, if you're not a coward, you're not gonna let your neighborhood go down.
Right.
It's like I live in the burbs out here in Phoenix now. These people do not play about these neighborhoods.
No,
that
number
takes
one,
strength to step in. Yeah, go ahead.
It goes back to money. You know, they can't have their property value decrease.
That's right.
Yeah,
and we're not talking.
And what do we say?
We're not
what do we
that.
Say? Money ain't everything. We say money ain't everything. That's what we say. Everybody else is about the money.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true, man. Man, Smitty,
yeah,
man, we thank you for your call, man. Anybody else out there would like to get in this conversation, you can dial 718-508-9972, press number 1. We would love to get you guys back in this conversation. Today we are talking about, are black people cowards? Strong statement. Let's see if we can prove this wrong or prove this right. Damn, let's keep it rolling, baby.
Well, I want to piggyback off of what, you know, Smitty was talking about with the neighborhood. And you and I had a conversation about why don't we go off and buy us some land, you know, just like how, you know, white people do. They go into this false situation, make them a brand new community, make, you know, bring everything that they need in their community and sustain it. Why can't we do that? You know, we... You know, just as he was saying, like, if we were to move into a neighborhood like that, I'm not saying all black people would, but we see it a lot. You know, we destroy what we got, or we destroy what we get. You know, we don't improve what we get. And that's where it comes into where just like how, you know, there's, you know, what is going on out there in Atlanta. You know, around the city limits, you know, they're remodeling some of those old apartments and making them condominiums.
Oh, yeah. You know, $300,000 condominiums in the hood, where the hood used to be at. Gentrification to its fullest.
Exactly. And what they're doing is you're raising the property value, you're pushing us out. Now, where is that leaving us? You know, why isn't anybody saying anything about that? Why isn't anybody, you know, trying to actually make a community where it is nice and livable and affordable for minority or, you know, people who don't make enough money to afford that to stay in? You know, we want nice things, but the thing, you know, that we have to look at as well, too, are we going to take care of? You know, because their fear is, well, when we move in, there goes the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Let's
get to the meat of it. Let's get to the real meat of it. The problem is everybody keeps looking for a black leader. They can't wait for something to come up. Man, it's Al Sharpton gonna come down talking about this. Is Jesse Jackson? First off, stop looking for somebody. It's just like I said before. It all starts at home. Somebody at home has got to step up and say. Somebody that's living in that neighborhood has got to step up and say, look, this is not right. Stop waiting on these black, because I'm going to tell you something about some of your quote-unquote black leaders today. A lot of them are cowards. A lot of them are some of the biggest cowards, and we look to them like they're still the leaders. No. Let's just be honest. They sat there, they kowtowed, they fetched. So anybody who came along when it was popular to be around Dr. Martin Luther King, they were around him. When it was popular to be around Malcolm X, they were around him. And it was popular to be around Robert Kennedy, they were around him.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest, if they were really that much of a threat, they'd be dead by now. Ask Medgar Evers' family. Ask Dr. King's family. Ask Malcolm X's family. Let's just get to the meat of it.
Yeah, a lot of those guys are
black leaders, and these people do not have our best interests at heart. They have their best interests because they're the quote-unquote last one standing, and they get money for going to these places and raising an uproar about it. Hence, Tavis Smiley and Cornel West going around with their damn poverty bus.
Jesse Jackson.
Yeah, I don't like him. And, you know, I don't have too much of a problem with Al Sharpton, but I noticed something with that brother lately, even just listening to his show every once in a while. He has to make a statement of, oh, no, I didn't say that. They said that. I didn't say that. It's cowardice. I mean, if you can't even express yourself on radio without the media or the people that are above you saying, hey, what are you doing saying that? Are you scared? Man, come on, man. Money ain't – you can make money anywhere else. You may not make the money that you have. I mean, I know we don't have the impact that we should have on mega media, you know, like the big media, the big, you know, like Fox and CNN or whatever. But at the same time, man, you know, there's other means to get your word out and get what you need to say out besides where you're at right now.
You might not be able to get Fox News, but you can definitely get Fox's local affiliate.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
The message will be stated.
Mm-hmm.
We got
a voice
right here.
We play it.
Okay. I'll say what I need to say.
Oh.
Go ahead, Jen.
I think, I know we're going to talk about this a little bit later in the show, but I think the perfect example of that is what's happening in, you know, my old high school in Gainesville, Georgia right now is our community is standing. I'm so proud of our community right now for this young man, Cody Smith, who has an injustice going on with him right now. And it's our local leaders, our local community, just regular people who are showing up to the school board meetings, who are, you know, organizing rallies, who are calling the news stations and local newspapers and saying that, you know, we're not going to stand by and see the justice happen. And I think that it happens more than we think. It's just that we as a people need to just band together. But in small pockets of the country, it does happen.
Right. And, you know, it kind of leads back to something like what we were talking about as far as, like, even with Roland Martin, you know, not being able to say and express what he wants to say. You have this young man over here, and you think about it, we're losing people every day in places where they could be making a difference in media. You know, I mean, this story right here, I don't know if anyone's heard about it, like Al referenced to it earlier if you're just tuning in. This young man is in Gainesville, Georgia. With what, Jen, a 4.7 GPA?
He has a this young man, Cody Smith, has a 4.75 GPA. He has the highest GPA in his high school, which, you know, he's supposed to, and he's also the star student. He has the highest SAT score in the high school. He has a four-year scholarship to Emory University, and he's supposed to be valedictorian. However, the school system, the Gainesville City school system, is trying to force Cody to share his valedictorian spot with another boy who has a lower GPA, and that other student so happens to be white and so happens to be rich. And they're trying to make this little boy who worked very hard for his, you know, grades and worked very hard to become valedictorian of his school, and they're trying to take his recognition away from him by making him share his valedictorian spot. And sharing the valedictorian spot has never been done before. They do not have a the same score. Cody has the obviously higher score, but yet he's being forced to share it. And when we ask for an explanation from the school board, none is given. It's just none is given at all. So what can you assume but is that this young man will be the first black valedictorian in our town's history?
Well, I pray he does. I pray that they actually, you know, make this goal successful for him, because it is needed. You know, I really hate that he is actually going through this, because I know that is a lot of pressure on him. I know he's probably going to be feeling uncomfortable at school. You know,
and he is.
Right?
I mean, this little boy is so humble. And so, and if it was up to him, he would share the spot with the other little boy if it was solely up to him. But I attended a rally tonight on this subject where there were some people from the NAACP and SDLC and the Rainbow Push Coalition. They did show up to this meeting, and but a lot more people from our local community showed up as well. And,
right.
You know, like they said, this is bigger than Cody, because he's an example of what other little boys and girls can be. And we as a people try to teach our children that if you work hard and you do the right things and you do what you're supposed to do, you'll be rewarded. And for them to think that they're going to take this away from him is unacceptable. It's unacceptable.
Let me say this much, and the young man, Cody, I will say this to you. Brother, in 5 years, this is going to be an afterthought to you. You are on your way to heights and levels of success that will take you far beyond that school. And I guarantee you, they're going to come calling.
Yep, most definitely.
They're going to come calling. Hey, why don't you come back and speak at the school? No, why don't you have that other guy come back and speak at the school? But I still want to say this. In terms of people saying that this is bigger than Cody, I think that's one of the biggest problems. In a grand sense of it, yeah, it may be bigger than Cody, but guess what? At the end of the day, this is still this young man. We have to concentrate. We have to hone in on people and not make them think this is about the bigger picture. No, this is about you as an individual, because this is very important. We have to make our youth feel and know that you are just as important as this big cause. Okay, it's fine. Rainbow Push is down there. SCLC, NAACP, that's fine. They're going to make the news with that. But it's the people within that community that are going to make the real impact.
Mm-hmm. My thing is, Nick, are they going to continue the pressure? You know what I mean? Because a lot of times,
they are going to continue. A deadline. Our community has stood up and given this the school board and the principals and the people that are in charge, 48 hours, where they said tonight, you know, they issued a statement publicly telling them that they have 48 hours to make this right for Cody, or,
right.
you know, or
wow.
we're going to take action.
Hey, but, you know, that's cool that your community has done that. But a lot of times, let's even take the Gina 6. When that incident happened, the media was there, hitting it strong, hitting it hard. And then all of a sudden, it just died. You don't even hear nobody talk about it unless they just reference it. Oh, I was dying there doing that movement. You know what I mean? The thing about it is, every time we have a situation in our community, we have our so-called, quote-unquote, black organizations go down there. And they, like Al said, they just getting that FaceTime, face on TV time. You know what I'm saying?
There's
as long
no
as the topic is hot, they there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
there's no follow-up.
Exactly.
No follow-up.
Where do we need to take this as far as dealing with a situation like that and then go to a whole different level? How can we take it beyond them just taking advantage of the situation? What can we do to keep the pressure up on every incident? Not just one, every incident.
Yeah,
Just you keep on pushing.
The thing is, not just showing up at school board meetings because this is going on. You show up at school board meetings because it's important because you live in this community, and what happens in the school system that you live in is important to your community. Schools are very important to the survival and of a community, and it's important, especially as Black people, to have a voice. I know I was president of the PTA for 3 years, and I can count on one hand how many times I had Black parents show up and come out in large numbers, or even call, and you know, I had a few, so I ain't going to say it wasn't any, but it really wasn't a lot that participated, and you really had to beg, you know, them to come out and to do things. And I know that, you know, people have jobs and stuff, but it's important to be involved, but regardless of anything is going on or not, to say that I am here, it is important.
Well, that's cool, Jen. And we need more participation in a lot of our schools with our people. And I think it's bigger than that also. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would love to see these organizations step up and do just like with the Jewish community. You say anything about them, you do anything towards them in a bad manner, they go ham on them. No pun intended.
Most definitely.
You know what I'm saying? The Latino brothers and sisters out there, they have an organization that if you say anything detrimental to their society or their community, they go in on. You know what I'm saying? INAACP, they'll pick their fight. They choose their fight. As long as they ain't messing with any of their sponsors. If they ain't messing with any of their little, you know, and I'm not a member of the NAACP, and I'm not just really down there like that. But at the same time, I would love to see more action when we have a situation like with this young man. And also even with Roland Martin. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Glad came in. They organized. Glad came in and was like, oh, he said this. And if anybody out there know about what I'm talking about with Roland Martin, the man practically just said, if your boy got excited about David Beckham's draws commercial during the Super Bowl, you should smack him upside the head. Now, what is gay about? What's gay about that? Where you get the gayness of that? In my opinion, it's cowardice that the fact that you did not have organizations, even the Black journalists, you know, they didn't even step up for this guy. You know what I mean?
I think that there's a level of accountability on all sides on that cast. Like, let's just be honest. You know, and I've been, you know, researching this the last few days, and a lot of this is opinion-based, but since we're covering all, you know, all bases on it, a lot of people felt like those same organizations, Roland Martin turned his back on when he did get to CNN.
Well, hey, man,
and
either
so
way
it does come down to, let's just be honest, it does come down to, you know, you turned your back on us, and now you need us.
Well, how many
not
people want to
pick up on you? I think it's one
picture,
isolated.
But there has to be a level of accountability for everyone.
Michael Jackson became Black after that second trial, didn't he? He had some Muslims around him, too, didn't he? Did we turn our back on him? No.
He made Thriller. First off, let me say this real quick. Shout out to our chat board. It is going down in the chat board right now. Black Awareness, Black Brotherhood, Black Man, Jay Works, Riding Dirty Radio, and all of our guests. It's going down over there in the chat board right now. I want all of you guys to call in and voice your opinion. 718-508-9972.
Hey, man. Black Brotherhood said Glad is Afrophobic.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is a word. Because it,
all right.
They love to say we homophobic when we speak out on certain things. Dealing with gay people, how can you be? I don't know of anyone that's scared of gay people. I'm scared of heights. When I get up into a high building, like on the 60th floor of a building, I get a little nervous. My knees shake. When I get around a gay person, I'm like, man, whatever, dude, just don't mess with me.
Yeah, yeah. Let's just be honest. If some big 6'9", 430-pound gay dude roll up on you and be like,
dude,
hey, how you doing with them jeans? You're going to feel a little scared.
I ain't scared, man, because number one, I'm a man. Because if a gay dude walk up on me like that and he come at me like that, I'm going to just politely tell him, brother, I don't get down like that. And if he want to take it further, I still got these hands. I'm a man.
What does a man got to do with me? What does that got to do with that?
If a Nick trying to impose that if a big dude walk up on me, I'm going to get scared. No.
He can
okay,
walk to me. He say, I like him and I want you.
We got a caller that want to comment, man. Let's take this call before y'all get out later.
Caller, you live on the Middleman Talk Show. What's up?
Yeah, this is Mr. Solution.
Hey,
am I on?
What's going on?
Hello?
What's going on?
What's going on?
How you doing?
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I can't hear you. There's a muffled. Hey, look here. I'm going to say something even the cowards can't disagree with. Well, maybe they can. The thing is that there's a lack of knowledge in the black community. There's mostly ego, virtually no knowledge. And so I'm going to recommend counseling. Counseling should be popularized by all of us, because it forces one to break outside of that stupid shell that they have surrounding them. And so that's what you have. You have cowardice, of course. You have ignorance, and you have ego. And so I think, and I'm just saying it very, very succinctly, and you can certainly ask a question if you like, but we're going to have to get counseling. We're walking around in a stupor. We're stupid. We don't know how to relate to each other. We
right.
don't know how to build a damn thing,
right.
and so on and so forth. So I'm going to suggest counseling as a regular and continual method of guidance.
Why would you say that, Richard?
Excuse me?
Why would you say that?
Why would I say that we need counseling?
Yeah. I mean, would you recommend that for the whole race of people, black race
absolutely,
of people?
Absolutely, without fail. Because if you look at it this way, and this is what you call a sine qua non, an mm-hmm. essential essence. Black people in America, unfortunately, can't feed or clothe themselves. That's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem.
Yes,
so,
it is. It's very much a problem.
That's a problem. And what you're doing is you're giving your lifeblood to other people who don't even like you. Now, how insane is that? So the point is you have no relationships between the man and the woman, so you have nothing to build upon. That's number one. And all of that has to do with ignorance and
right.
fearfulness and ego. So I'm recommending counseling so that we can actually get some damn direction. There's a branch of science known as synectics. It's problem stating and critical problem solving. Identifying the problem is half the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Most blacks haven't a clue what the problems are, let alone what the solutions are. So
do you think that the problem, it's so complicated where
no.
even if you did have an analogy of it, you couldn't really just pinpoint it to one thing that's what's
no,
the hindrance of all of us?
No. The problems are very, actually solutions to a problem are necessarily simpler than the problem. Hence, it's the solution. So we've got to build businesses. The one thing we don't like to do is ask anybody. We're very pompous. We think we know it all. We
right.
don't. And we love to fight. The average black person will put in much more energy fighting and disagreeing than they ever put in collaborating. One thing we don't do, we don't quote each other. Think about that for a minute. White people quote each other all the time. They're always quoting. In fact, if you read any book, any discipline, they start out with quoting Aristotle, Socrates,
yeah.
Plato. They quote yeah. their founding fathers. Black people don't quote each other. That's sad. That means
and
they don't.
We have a selfish mentality of wanting to, you know, it's all about me. I did this. Nobody helped me to get where I am.
Well, we're really not doing that much. Like 80% of blacks who have degrees work for the local, the federal, or the state governments, okay? There are virtually zero black businesses. And just as I mentioned, and you tell me if I'm wrong, I stand to be corrected, in virtually no community in America do blacks have well-stocked black-owned grocery stores.
No, we do not.
No, we don't. We don't.
Okay, that's a problem. So Dr. Claude Anderson wrote a book. I highly recommend him, Powernomics, he talks about connecting with your universities, in order to get a plan. Blacks have no think tanks. Whites have myriads of think tanks, Brookings Institute, the Cato Institute, the Hoover Institute. I mean, you can just go on and on. We live in a complex, complicated society. And that's fine. That's because we've built it up. But we need to be advised. Blacks have no advisors. Even if you go to the Jewish community, rabbis are very brilliant. And they look out for the people who are also intelligent, but they look out for their community. Who looks out for blacks? The pulpit pimp? The pulpit pimps?
Well, you know what the problem is with that, though, honestly? Just going back, and I'm agreeing with you, but just like you said, in the Jewish community, they look to the rabbis. We automatically, in the black community, we dismiss our religious leaders as being the pulpit pimp.
Wow.
We automatically dismiss them. And don't get me wrong, there are some flashy ones out there. There are, but there are also some hardworking religious leaders that are out there. And one of our frequent listeners, an artist by the name of Michael Ayers, he did a song called I Am a 99. We just played this past Thursday. And he said, how am I supposed to teach my babies when I don't drive a Bentley or a Mercedes? Unfortunately, in our community, we equate material things with success.
Yep.
And if we don't see those material things from hardworking people, we don't consider them successful, so we don't value their opinion.
The measure
it's a mentality change.
Right, I was on a show this morning. It was all females. Oh, how I love that. I love talking with you. But see, this was the thing. They were asking the question, could you be single while you're married? And immediately, you know, I told them that's oxymoronic. That's crazy. If you want to stay single, damn it, stay single. If you're married, you're committed to the other person. So there, I recommended counseling. Black folks need counseling. They need, and what I'm going to encourage you guys to do, I'm going to enlist you to, first of all, recognize that, acknowledge that, and then start to promote that. We need to bring the black counselors are afraid. I mean, it's amazing. Black people try to service other people who really don't want their service before they service themselves. You're always supposed to be your own base. Everybody understands.
But we as a people have a fear of, like, the word counselor. I believe in counseling. I believe in therapy. I'm a big believer in it. But, like, African Americans have a big problem even with the word counselor because, like, I think you said it perfectly earlier. We have a fear of other people telling us what to do. We have a fear of people, you know, that make us inferior because we reach out for help. I don't know how we as a people get over that hump.
I'll explain it. It's very simple. It's very simple. And they do it all the time on Wall Street, Madison Avenue. I bet if I said to you right now, Winston tastes good, like, finish that for me.
I can't.
Okay, that's fine. But what I'm saying is repeating something that's appropriate is the way you address that. That's what customs in a culture do. They repeat that which the culture finds important in order to inculcate it in the ones that they want to carry that culture. So the answer is not to retreat from something that's good, but to promote it. And that's called creating a critical mass, or what you call inertia, right? We need to create a healthy inertia. And it's horrible being on a losing team all the time. Even if you are an individual winner, which I believe many of us are,
right?
You hate being part of a losing team because when your team loses, you lose. Now, somebody in the chat room asked me what the problems are. I just stated the problems. You can't feed and clothe yourself. Therefore, you can't pass anything on to your legacy. You've got to start to communicating to form a base where you have your own businesses. That's critical.
We agree, Richard. We agree, man. We thank you for your call. And if you want to get back in this conversation, you can press that 1 again or just hit back in the line. We got another caller that's been holding for a little while. All right. Thank you. All right. Black Man 37, what's going on?
Hello. How are you doing, family?
Hey, everything's there, my brother.
What I wanted to say is, well, first I have to disagree that we don't take counseling from someone. I take counseling. We get counseled on a daily basis. It's called television.
Hmm.
It's called movies. Hmm. It's called
radio
society. Right. So the way society is, somebody sits around and dictate, or somebody, a group of individuals, I'll say, sit around and determine, okay, we should be able to make this popular. Let's put all our money and energy into this, make a commercial, and we'll make this popular, or we'll make this word popular, or we'll make a movie, and then we'll get a catchphrase, and then that will become popular. See, that's usually our counseling, because usually, psychologically, we follow that than we anything else. You know, like the word swag.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay? That's one. You know, all these different words or catchphrases or these things that society say we should have, like you were saying about the somebody was saying about the pastor.
Mm-hmm.
The pastor is not relevant unless he have big car, lots of money, flashy suits, and a big church.
That's right.
Then he's considered, that's what a businessman, that's what a man that's successful is supposed to look like. That's what we're supposed to follow under him. But the problem is those who usually are at that particular level don't come back to help others get to that same level as he gets to. For example, you have many books telling you, well, you become successful if you follow this, to be successful. But there's other parts of the game they don't really tell you about how you can have a successful business. And I wish I could remember this man's name. He had a lecture. He was talking about this. This one white gentleman was talking about this. He's like, these guys who run some of the automotive industries, you know, these big CEOs, and they write these books talking about how they became successful. But really, they had ghostwriters write these books, and the reason they got successful is because they decreased the hours and the money of their employees while they sucked up all the money themselves. That's how they really became successful. They
mm-hmm.
screwed the workers, and they gained all the money for themselves.
Right.
So it's really
sounds
no
real familiar.
Secret, huh? Yeah, and you know, and that's why it's really no secret. This is a game that's being played. So, yeah, we got counseling, all right. We got the wrong type of counseling. What we need is the right type of counseling, and that's where it goes in what the young lady was saying.
Right.
We need somebody to go to people who can set our minds back to a correct level so that we are able to function. And then what Mr. Solutions was saying, a.k.a. Richard out of California, was saying is that we don't have our own infrastructure in place. And he's right. And it's hard to obtain that infrastructure in place is because we have very successful black folks who are billionaires, millionaires, multimillionaires. They do not and refuse to go out and get the resources and grow the resources, if necessary, to bring them back to this broken community, which we call a black community, in order for us to feed our people correctly, the correct knowledge, the correct food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you do not have those things, you cannot move correctly. So it's not that we couldn't have access to these things. You have a continent that is rich with resources. Now, how many of us as African Americans or Africans, stolen Africans, or black people, as they would like to be called, how many of us have access to these resources?
Somewhat limited,
The berries. Yeah, the minerals. You know, gold, diamonds, rubies, sapphire. We don't
have
cotton to make cloth or toilet paper or sanitary napkins for women. We don't have those things. And if you do not have those things, you're going to constantly work under somebody else and continue to follow somebody else. Well, if that other person who actually has these resources collapses, like America and some of the European countries are starting to do, what will you do then? That's the question I like to pose out here to people who may think being successful is to follow the American dream, which is a nightmare.
Right.
It's a dream. What do you do in a dream? You're asleep. You're not woke. Part of your subconscious is moving, but your conscious self is not.
It's something to just keep us basically like a hamster in the wheel to a certain degree. And I agree with you on that. You know, it's a lot of things. You know, Richard made some great points. You made some great points. I really feel that, you know, for our community to get right and have some courage about itself, we definitely have to stand up and make a stand somewhere. We've been asking for this stand. I was listening to some old clips of Malcolm X earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things that he was expressing are some of the things that we still have issue with to this day. And that speech kind of stand upon our whole society, our community, really. You know, it's crazy to me.
And it's sad. You know, it's sad because we don't want to do it because we're afraid to do it. Because if we do it, we may get labeled, oh, you're trying to do that black thing. It's really not a black thing. It's more so taking care of the community thing. This whole notion race, first for instance, race is a social construct. Before we were even called a race, we were tribes and families or civilizations. The Egyptian civilization, the Kushite civilization, the Nubian civilization, you know. So it's not really a race thing. It's more of a people, tribe, community, civilization type of movement. And that's what we need to get to. However, we're just fighting against ourselves as well because we got those who want to do and those who refuse to do.
That's right.
So you got that. And Roland Martin, real quick, you know, nobody's going to come out and help Roland Martin because these gay organizations are meant to emasculate black men and force you to bow to their standard.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are heterosexual, you are an enemy, and there's something wrong with you because you're supposed to be homosexual. That's what that means. That's what you're seeing with Roland Martin.
I'm seeing, I agree with the same thing. And we thank you for your call, man. We're going to bring this next caller in. Now, what the brother was saying, there was a comment out here on the radio dealing with the whole Roland Martin thing. They were saying, one gay gentleman made a statement saying that just let all the heterosexual be as they be. They'll die out soon. I'm like, that is an oxymoron to even say. How are we going to die? We make babies. Let's bring in this next call. Caller, you're live on the Middleman Talk Show. What's up?
I don't know if that's me or not.
That's you.
I'm going to ask.
All right,
okay,
it's you.
Okay, good. You know, I'm hearing these collective solutions for almost everything. And I understand that progress is made through individuals coming together in voluntary association to fix whatever problems that they have identified and can pose a solution for in that form of collective.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems as if whenever I hear people speaking about this in regard to the black community, in regard, I almost hear a messianic call, an impulse to messianism, which seems to imply we need to have a Moses. And, you know, the United States is a living example of the proposition that, you know, you descend essentially from the collective since colonial days. The Judeo-Christian heritage in America has meant pretty much unequivocally recognizing the individual. The individual comes together in voluntary association with others, not an enforced collective.
Right.
That's not what this country is based on. And if you do, you're going to go wrong. I think to some extent, it's what's gone wrong in the black community ever since we eschewed much of what Booker T. Washington told us to do, which was to prepare ourselves for opportunities. Yes, I understand why you could have a problem with some aspects of his message, but we've almost completely given over to the W.E.B. Du Bois notion of political collective action. That's the most important thing, which it isn't anymore.
Mm-hmm. So
it just isn't.
Well, then what would it be then?
Well, it's to be ready, to get ready, to take care of what you've got to do to further your opportunities, to be prepared, even if you're talking about nation building.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize the immensity of diverse skills required to nation build. I'm sure you
I agree with that statement.
They got to be individual. They can't be collective.
Well, it still takes a collective effort to make certain things happen, though. Wouldn't you agree, brother?
But if you don't have the individual mindset to stand up,
I know what he means.
And work together.
Right.
But it's individuals being prepared. Even in communist Russia, they already had a nation upon which they built it from. So, yeah, they messed it up in many ways worse than it was before, but they already had millions of people who had the necessary skills for nation building that they could start with. You talking about from scratch, you better come up with a whole bunch of individually prepared individuals. Not a collective, because a collective ain't going to build a nation. It's going to be individuals coming together collectively.
I can agree, but I somewhat disagree. I agree, but I just kind of, I agree. I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean, but I know collectively, you know, like even with a fist, I could poke you out with a finger. But with a fist, I can knock your head off.
All right. Okay. But look, see, one reason why we're lamenting this failure, this collective ideal, this collective Beau ideal, because that's not what the United States is founded on. It isn't founded on collectivism as such.
Well, it is. Our communities need to be communities. And I understand in that community you do have individuals.
But the first communal experiments in this country were dismal failures. The people almost starved because they were hooked on this communalism. Not communities, but communalism. It almost caused them to starve to death. It wasn't until they could let people work their own land and keep the surplus to sell and trade with others and with the Indians that they started to prosper. I mean, it's a historical fact. Look at Governor Bradford's reports and discussions. He said, we almost starved the first year. Then we got away from that and told people, okay, you're free to keep most of the fruits of your labor to do with as you wish. That's when they started to prosper.
Well, Al,
that's true.
I
understand the impulse to collectivism because, you know, I mean, it sounds like a quick and easy way out, but it isn't.
Not necessarily, because
it
even in that, even with everybody working together, you're still going to have individuals that's not going to do what they need to do. We understand that. If everybody collect, if each individual had a part to play in the collective, then it would make more sense for everybody to say, okay, each individual helped build everything. But a lot of times that collective is not going to do right because of certain individuals.
Okay, but see, that's the beauty of the, individual enterprise and free market cooperatives, because you're going to fail. They will fall by the wayside. They will not be around. And the ones that will stay are the ones who have figured out the best ways to prosper. It doesn't subsidize failure, like Obama's Government Motors. Ford is doing okay and doing quite well. Government Motors is still trying to foist the Chevy Volt on us, despite the fact they're catching fire and burning up and nobody wants to buy them. Why? Because normally if it was like Ford with the Edsel, they just drop the damn thing and be through with it. But because the government's subsidizing it, nobody's got to worry about failing. They just keep trying to push it off us whether the public wants it or not. With free market enterprise, failures are allowed to fail. They go by the wayside. If you've got something that makes people want and they want to be involved in, it will succeed.
Well, when
it
comes to
prosper.
When it comes to business, I can respect your opinion on that. But when it comes to a community of people, sometimes we can't afford to let our children fail.
You're right, Kev, but I think what he's trying to get to a point
of
is it's an individual effort for a collective goal. It has to be.
I mean, it's amazing because if you look at the Nation of Islam, for the longest time, the Nation of Islam was all for free market capitalism to the extent they can make it work. I mean, them guys out there pushing them bean pies, man, that's entrepreneurship.
Exactly.
And real conservative values.
Well, I see nobody else has an opinion on it. They just agree with you, but I mean, I can respectfully agree to disagree with some of the things you're saying. Some of the things I do agree with, just my opinion.
I'm surprised
Ian is quiet on this one.
Well, look, here's what I'm saying. This is what I'm trying to make the point here. Look, much of what we have to complain about the United States in its past history, and I'm a historian. I love history. I read black history all the time. I got 800 books in my collection, about 250 of them about black history. Much of our past grievances are legitimate, that we have to argue about the system, what it did in its form of its repression and its atrocities committed against black people. It's indisputable. It is a fact that cannot be argued. However, that's not what the cause of our contemporary anguish is, I don't think. Not our contemporary anguish. We have not taken advantage of the opportunities this country has to offer.
You think?
It is not now, despite the fact we have infinitely more opportunity to do so now than ever. Look at the movie of Tuskegee Airmen. These men were prepared to take advantage of the opportunity when it came up, and they did so. Look at
you're right. Look at that movie. When what's his name, the guy who did Star Wars, when he went to They did not produce that movie. How? Because he had Star Wars money, he was able to produce that movie. Not many black people have that kind of money just to do what they want to do.
Well, you can't look at massive collective to say that because people don't have the money to budget a multi-million-dollar movie, they don't have the opportunity for something on a much smaller scale, which can also lead to greater things. After all, out of mighty oaks, out of small acorns grow. I mean, this country is, look, and we say nothing of getting, and again, collective effort and voluntary association with people who you can get to agree with, you can trust to work as hard as you're willing to work, to put skin in the game of their own. You get together with them, and y'all get together, and you make something work.
And I think trust is probably one of the bigger issues in that. And that's something that we're going to have to definitely get into our next show. We definitely appreciate the call. We're at the end of the show. We want to go ahead and thank everybody for calling in today. This was on the anniversary.
Oh, yeah.
Very enlightening.
We got to do something else.
We're going to have to do a second part to this show.
We definitely got to do a second part to this show. Definitely.
Hey, man, give a shout-out to everybody over on the chat board, Black Man 37, Brotherhood, Black Brotherhood, all the guests that were popping in and out, International Booby.
Black Awareness, Sarge, Live and Dirty Radio.
Yes, everybody that tuned in tonight, we do appreciate y'all. I hope that this conversation will stimulate more conversations amongst you and your peers. And the show was titled, "Are Black People Cowards?" Some of the things, you know, that we talked about were, you know, somewhat exciting to some people, but, hey, me personally, some things in our communities, we need to step up. We just need to get it done. That's just my opinion.
Yep.
Go ahead, Al.
So we just need to be, you know, more solution-focused. I think, we had some good suggestions and some good solutions that came through this show. We analyzed a lot of things that, we wanted to talk about on this particular show. We had some great opinions from our callers that called into the show as well. Definitely, you all can definitely go back and listen to the archive of this particular show. Make sure you click on Are Black People Cowards to re-listen to the show. If you tuned in a little late, please go back and listen to the show from the beginning. You know, this show is pretty good, baby. Thanks a lot, listeners.
Very, very good. Yeah. Oh, man, I enjoyed this web chat. I'm going to have to save this web chat over here to all the people that's just tuning in. Make sure you always go to our web chat. Check it out. I'm going to have to save this one, y'all. I'm going to have to go back and read a lot of this because it was pretty heated over here. Missed a lot of conversations over there. We would like to
have Negro pleases and yeah.
Oh, yeah. And, man, this coming up Thursday, what do we have coming up this Thursday, Nick?
This coming Thursday, in light of recent events, we talked about it a little bit earlier, but in less than a month, we've lost three of the most important figures in black music, and this is the kickoff of Black History Month. So this coming Thursday on Talk of the Town, we're going to do a special dedication to some of the unsung heroes of black history in music, in medicine, and everything. We're going to really dwell into this because we got to know we're losing a lot of our legends, not just on the entertainment front, but just in general. And I know Talk of the Town is an entertainment show, but this is a message that needs to get out. So this coming Thursday on Talk of the Town with Nick Eaton, we will be discussing the unsung heroes of black history.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Once again, we would like to thank everybody for tuning in. Make sure you tell a friend to tell a friend to tune in with us every Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern. Just always go back, like Al said, go back, listen to our archives. Hopefully, if you're hearing the shows that you like prior to this one, hit us up at wearethemiddlemen@gmail.com. That's correct spelling all the way through. We are T-H-E, middlemen@gmail.com. Make sure y'all get at us on anything else.
Proper grammar.
Yes.
And
yes.
Make sure y'all tune in next Sunday. We have a great show planned next Sunday. The title of this particular show is called Woman, the Builder, or the Destroyer.
Richard would love
that. Y'all with that.
Richard would love that.
Mr. Solution.
Richard would love Mr. Solution. I'm sorry. He would love that. It's not down in the sister. It's not down in the sisters at all. Make sure y'all tune in. If you know a strong sister, tell her to tune in. She probably going to agree with us.
Yeah, and probably tune in because I probably need some reinforcement.
No, it ain't going down.
Knowing
you
guys.
You know what? Well, hey, man, we got a best of Talk of the Town this week. Nick, is it okay if we play one of the best of this week for you, man?
Yeah, man, yeah. This is one of my favorite ones. One of my favorite Talk of the Town. After you listen to it, you'll know why.
Talk of the Town with Nick Eaton. Best of, baby.
What's up, world? This is your man, Nick Eaton, and I am here with the Talk of the Town. R&B singer Life Jennings was sentenced to 3.5 years behind bars this week in an Atlanta court for a 2008 indictment.
Niggas, you crazy!
Booked at Cobb County Jail, the singer was charged with DUI text refusal, criminal trespassing, discharging a weapon near a street, possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, and fleeing or attempting to elude a police officer. This all stemming from an incident involving the mother of his children back in 2008. He was immediately sent to jail. Bishop Eddie Long.
Hey, boy. You look mighty cute in them jeans.
The famous preacher has come under fire this week for allegedly coercing 4 young males into a sexual relationship under the guise of spiritual leadership. Hundreds of people waited outside the Georgia preacher's megachurch this Sunday, anticipating his arrival so that he could address the allegation.
He's here, yes. It's him.
Bishop Long took the stage, and without directly denying the allegations, he did state, "I am not a perfect man, but this thing I'm going to fight." Some of the people waiting outside gathered together and began to sing several songs.
Well, there once were 2 cowboys all alone out on the trail, and they discovered they could sleep with another male. Now they're having butt sex. Cowboy butt sex. Come on, everybody. Sodomy.
This is your man, Nick Eaton, and this is the Talk of the Town.
That's one of my favorites right there.
That's one of my favorites.
Pretty horrible.
Yes.
Hey, man, we got a strongly worded letter from Glad this week.
I wish they would. I wish they would. Please, if you know any representatives of Glad, tell them to call in. See if they can get us shut down. Make us come in there and sit down and apologize to them. It ain't going to happen.
Hey, man, I got a note passed to me talking about staff meeting after the show, and he's sitting right from me.
Well, one up, one down. Jen, we appreciate you for coming back. 3 years, y'all. Anniversary.
I know.
Anniversary. Yes.
Winning.
Yes.
Four.
Calm down, y'all. 2012.
The middle man shouted, Beat Chris shouted. Now I ain't sure what you was tuning in to, but pay attention to the real talk. What we here for, so take a listen time out. Take a minute. Shout in and learn some. Put your mind to grind the world. You destined to earn some. Linda, here, comment on what you hear. Let's figure out this master plan to put this thing in gear. Don't matter if you hood or you corporate. Don't get you got a will to do way better than you were doing. Well, then you fortunate. Take a stand. Stop complaining about what you ain't got. Hating on the next man because he was dying to wreck shop. Every Sunday, tune in. Go live 6 p.m. blogtalkradio.com. The middle me. Hey. What's happening in the middle, man? Hey, what's happening in the middle, man? Hey, what's happening? BlogTalkRadio.com, the middle, man.
Yeah, this your boy Southside checking in with the Middleman Talk Show. And you already know, if you ain't connected through the middleman, you ain't connected at all.